This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. ArmorAll, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, guys, listen to me. I need all your eyes. This is what we train for. This is what we work for. This is who we are. We came out and we found a way. We always said it would not be pretty. We'll win the game. We'll come back in here and have a good time and figure out how we can get better. This is what I need. This is what I need. Everybody listen. We win one moment at a time.
Welcome back to another episode of the Junkyard Dogcast. I'm your host, Jordan Hill. Got Benjamin Wolf with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Quite a bit to talk about. The first day of spring practice for the Georgia Bulldogs. Technically, it's just now underway. I believe about right now they're out on the practice field. Did not get a viewing period on the first day. I do believe we're going to have that later in the week. But still a lot to discuss and a lot to digest from what was a very busy day. We had a chance to talk to Kirby Smart. We talked to several players. A lot of news and notes to sort of look through decipher what it means for this team as it was preparing for the first of 15 practices. Ben, we are fully in it now. How everything going on Tuesday for you?
Yeah, well, for the first time of like the 50 times that we say it throughout the year, football is back. It makes me happy to know that football is back. Just something about Kirby Smart walking into the press conference room today. It was like, all right, it feels real. We saw some players walking over toward the facility today. The buzz is back. And, you know, I, for one, as much as, you know, I know we'll have the basketball minute and I know the baseball team is being snubbed out of a top 25 ranking right now as one of the, you know, winningest teams in the country. But to me, you know, when there's football practice going on, it's a good time of year.
Well, let's jump into it with what was honestly the biggest piece of news. And it's all about injuries. The guys that are either limited for Georgia going into the start of spring practice. And in one case, who will no longer be playing for the Bulldogs. Kirby Smart announced on Tuesday that tight end Pierce Berlin has been medically disqualified due to a congenital heart condition. Very tough break for Pierce. I thought he came on really strong there toward the end of his freshman season. And, you know, it was pretty fitting. You know, he had a big catch in the Orange Bowl. He's from Florida. I'm sure that meant quite a bit to him, but we can kind of dive into exactly that means in a few minutes. But obviously, sending well wishes to Pierce Berlin and his family as well. I'm sure that's very hard. But Kirby mentioned that Pierce is still going to be out there, you know, helping out. And it seems like, you know, they're going to watch out and try to make sure that he's taken care of, because I'm sure this is very hard having football taken away from him. Looking at some of the other guys, Bo Hewley is going to be out for spring after a shoulder surgery. Tyrion Ingram-Dawkins, man, my breakouts team really took a hit. I had Pierce. I also had Tyrion Ingram-Dawkins. He's going to spring after having a foot surgery. That makes sense after he was sort of slowed down last year. Chris Jones, one of the freshman linebackers, had surgery. I think it impacted his high school senior season. So he's going to be limited. Christian Miller, defensive lineman, meniscus surgery, progressing back, will be limited. Smile Munden's going to miss spring. I don't think that was a huge surprise. He's been coming back from that foot injury. Does sound like he will be ready by the time we get to fall camp. Running back Branson Robinson, still coming back from that patella tendon rupture. Kirby said he looks good running straight ahead, still not going to be cleared. I think that falls in line with the timeline that was expected for Branson. Malachi Starks, safety, shoulder surgery will be limited. Honestly, Ben, I was sort of surprised. I thought that Malachi may not be out there at all. So to hear that he is just limited seems like a good sign. Rara Thomas, still coming off that foot injury that affected him last season, won't be at full speed, but it does sound like he will be participating. Damon Wilson had surgery, fully active now. Definitely a good sign at outside linebacker. DeMello Jones, Colby Young, sounds like they're a little beat up to start spring. Might be a limited for a bit, but definitely in good shape for the long haul. A lot to go through there. A lot of guys that have been impacted and affected as far as going to spring. What do you make of where this team is right now in terms of health and who's going to be out there and who will not be?
Yeah, well, and you would know better than me. This is my first spring back on the Georgia beat, if you will. So I was not familiar with Kirby Smart just rattling off all of that at the very start of spring practice. I mean, that's how he chose to start it off. I'm sure that he knew sort of what a lot of the questions were going to end up being. And rather than make overcomplicate things, just come out right and say, hey, here's sort of the laundry list of injuries that we've got going on. I mean, it's hard for the biggest takeaway not to be Pierce Sperlin, even though of all the players that we named, he might have had the least depth chart impact to what was going on. But whenever you know, because he is someone that's battled through injuries in his time at Georgia, and he's worked his tail off and he's fought hard. And I know in his childhood, he was a big time Georgia fan. And he grew up wanting to play football games in Sanford Stadium. And so, you know, for it to play out like this is a bummer. We're obviously thinking about Pierce. We're thinking about his family. We're thinking about, you know, his teammates having to work through it in the tight end room as well, just because, I mean, truth be told, it does, you know, from a personnel standpoint, it certainly thins things out in the tight end room, but certainly that's not the priority when you're talking about the Pierce Sperlin situation. Just bummer. Something that Kirby Smart mentioned, they were aware of a heart condition that they were aware of prior to signing him, and that it was something that they've worked through, but, you know, conversations this offseason just made it feel like that was the right move. I mean, from a purely, you know, Georgia 2024 season standpoint, I mean, I think for the most part, nobody's going to be entirely out. I mean, Tyrion Ingram Dawkins, he's going to be out, but should be ready for fall camp. I think that's a substantial one, not just for your breakout player draft, but also, you know, just for the defensive line room in general. He's someone that I think Georgia just desperately wants to find a way to be healthy for an extended period of time. He's had a lot of trouble staying on the field. And so I think getting him healthy is really important. I think Kirby sort of talked about the fact that they needed to make some decisions about when was the right time to do it and what made sense for him and why. And I think that for them, if they can get a healthy Ingram Dawkins in the fall, that's more important than anything that would be happening this spring. So I think that that's really a priority there. And then, you know, Smile Munden not being out there, it's going to give a lot of, and that's not, you know, huge, like crazy surprising news. We know that he's been dealing with that foot injury and surgery, you know, really longer and to more of an extent than he ever let on. I mean, he finally brought it up today that he'd been playing with a broken foot late in the season after injuring it in the Ole Miss game. And so, you know, it for him, I think getting healthy is really important. I think it's also a great opportunity for Georgia's linebackers. I mean, we've talked a bunch about the freshman and sophomore class of linebackers and how talented and deep those groups are. And for them to be able to take on a lion's share of the reps this spring, I think is really, really important for them. I did find it notable that despite the fact he's injured, he wheeled in on his scooter into the press conference room today. And I think it says a lot about how Kirby Smart views Smile Munden as a leader. Obviously, he's paid his dues and he's sort of reached that veteran in the room status. And I think you know, he's a guy that's been a little bit more shy, a little bit short in his words at times throughout the years at Georgia. And he's still, you know, not going to be, you know, spewing at the podium, but he certainly opened up a little bit today. And it feels to me like he is really, really ready to assume a leadership role once he's back healthy this fall.
Yeah. I want to make sure I get the wording right, but he was asked about talking to Trevor Etienne and if Georgia fans will remember, Smile had a big tackle on a trick play, and he was asked about it, and he's like, yeah, basically the first thing I said to him was like, dude, what were y'all trying to do? And like, yeah, that was definitely sort of, I think you got the sense of Smile is definitely more comfortable out there than I think he's been in times past. That was definitely very fun to see. He gave some really good insight. And again, the fact they sent him up there, even though he won't be practicing this spring, I think says a lot. I did want to share what Pierce Brunton had shared on social media Tuesday afternoon. This was part of the post that I always knew this was a possibility, and I feel like God graciously gave me a year of playing college football at the highest level on the number one team in America. That is something I will carry with me forever. So again, you know, it's hard to maybe have that wrap around, you know, wrap your head around the fact that he won't be able to play. But definitely wishing him well, because that's definitely a very serious situation. I mean, I think about a few years ago when CJ Washington, the linebacker, wound up getting hurt and he winds up getting medically disqualified. But you look at Pierce Brown, I mean, with the heart, I mean, just how serious that situation could be. Definitely, I think they made the right decision there, as hard as that is to come to terms with, because I'm sure that is very hard for Pierce. With some of those other injuries, I mean, you hit on the biggest thing for me, you know, especially when we talked to Smile and, you know, it being brought up that Jamon's not there anymore. You know, all of a sudden, CJ Allen's kind of the oldest guy in the room with Smile watching from the sidelines. So that's definitely a very different, you know, it's a change of pace at linebacker, and it gives an opportunity for some of those young guys to make an impact, you know, for some of those guys to get valuable reps. I mean, having those three freshmen, Justin Williams, Chris Cole, and Christopher Jones, even Christopher Jones a little bit limited at this point, big opportunity there, I think, at inside linebacker. And it'll be interesting to see just what those guys are able to do, because, you know, in the grand scheme of things, spring practice isn't everything. But when you look at those freshmen going through it for the first time, this is a super valuable time for those guys to make an impact.
Definitely.
So let's talk a little bit about what we heard from some of the interviews. We talked to Kirby Smart, also talked to Carson Beck, Tate Ratledge, Mykael Williams, and Smile Munden, as we mentioned. And I want to say, what stood out to you, Ben? And I'll get us started and say, I was a little bit surprised about how open Mykael Williams was talking about outside linebacker, you know, playing a little bit more there compared to defensive end. I figured that, you know, he'd probably be coached up to say, yeah, you know, I'll get some looks there. But he seemed like, you know, he's really adamant about getting that extra work there. I think that that's just super interesting. Super interesting, too, mentioning that, you know, Ingram Dawkins to me was the obvious guy that, okay, if they're going to play Mykael standing up more, you're going to see more of Ingram Dawkins there at defensive end. And maybe we will see that by the time we get to fall camp. But what'd you think about that? I mean, I thought it was a little bit surprising to hear Mykael being, you know, pretty open about the fact that he's going to be standing up more going forward, and that he sees it as a real strength of his and something that he can take on.
Yeah. I mean, he said he sees it looking a lot like the Florida State game did, where I think they maybe experimented a little with what that would look like. You know, Kirby's downplayed it at times in the past too, saying like, you know, oh, well, he splits time there and he always has and whatever. I just think that the, you know, snap share where he's splitting time there is probably going to increase toward the outside linebacker room. You know, credit to Mark Weiser from Athens Banner Herald. He actually asked the question about what position coach you're reporting to. And I found that to be one of the more interesting parts of it, because he said it's Trey Scott is the person that I'm going to, you know, that's who's my position coach and that's the meetings that I'm in, but that he meets with Chidera Uzodiribe almost separately to understand the outside linebacker stuff the way that he does too. So it's almost like he's having to put in a little bit of overtime to be able to get, you know, what he needs from that Jack linebacker position. So I find that really interesting. I think that you're right. The health of other guys and the progression of some of the other people in that outside linebacker room is going to dictate a lot of it. But I do think that Mykael Williams, he brought it up, like, why do I want to try this move to Jack linebacker? And why does it make sense for me? And he's talked about, you know, when he plays that three tech inside defensive line role and he's rushing the guard in that spot, and now he's going to be out all the way to nine technique. I mean, you're not finding many guys that are able to span that level of versatility. And I think that he, for him, this is a show me year to NFL scouts to be able to say, here's everything that I'm capable of. And I think that one of the knocks, you could say, sometimes for that defensive end role in Georgia's defense is it's not a stat chasing position. I mean, it's not something where you're going to jump off the page as, oh my gosh, look at all the plays that this guy's making. You're going to be serving your role the way that you need to be doing it. And if you do it at an elite level, Georgia's defense is going to be elite. I think getting out to that Jack linebacker role gives him the ability to, you know, accumulate stats in more of a way that's, you know, resonates maybe a little bit more with the NFL draft side of things. And so, you know, I think it's a really interesting storyline to follow. And, you know, I think it's one that could evolve throughout the year too, just depending on who's available and who's not from an injury standpoint.
I want to talk a little bit about what Kirby had to say, and I'm trying to just rattle through in my head some of the different topics he had. It was interesting. You know, he was asked about, is there a different feeling coming into this year compared to the last few, because they're not coming off a national championship season. And I do think that Kirby was being sincere when he said it's really no different. And it matches what Kirby has said in past years, in past springs, you know, these last few years, that Kirby's made it a point that they don't really, you know, lean on what happened the year before. And, like, you know, coming off of that first national championship, they weren't worried about changing things up or getting too caught up in the fact they'd finally won a national title. And now it's sort of on the other side of it. Well, we missed out on one last year. That doesn't change how we, you know, go about our business, how we prepare. You know, I think that, you know, as much coach speak as we hear sometimes from Kirby, and it's natural with any coach, I do think he's being very honest about that, that they make a concerted effort not to get caught up in what happened last season. And it makes sense just in general to look at this team. I mean, I think they said, what, there's like 33 new players. At a certain point, you know, why linger on last year's team? Because this is a very different team compared to the one that played last season.
Yeah, I totally agree. It did feel to me, all of that said, it did feel to me like Tate Ratledge and Carson Beck do hold a little bit of, and Micah Williams too, even, I don't want to say bitterness, but like the disappointment with how last year ended. And like when you talked, or when Smile Mundon and, you know, Carson Beck talked about their reasons for why they want to come back. I mean, I think the fact that I think Tate Ratledge said it, there was a bad taste in my mouth from last year. And so I don't think that anything that happened last year is dictating how they're handling their business this year. But I think one thing Kirby talked about a lot last offseason that he was so concerned about was complacency, and how if you let that leak into your program too much, it can be, you know, fatal. And that's not the reason why Georgia lost last year. I think they did an unbelievable job of avoiding complacency, but it's a lot easier to not have to worry about that when you know that a good portion of your team that experienced some of the things that they experienced last year are pissed off coming into this season and don't want to replicate the results from last season. And so I think if anything, you know, that the approach isn't going to be any different, but I think the feeling in the room, if anything, probably only helps the culture and making sure that everybody's doing the things that they need to do to be successful.
We'll take a quick break, come back, talk a little bit more about what stood out to us from these interviews, talk about Pro Day for Georgia coming up, and finish it off with a little Georgia men's basketball.
On May 23rd,
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
Ben, I'm going to throw it to you because you wrote the story. What did you learn about Carson Beck's Lamborghini, and what were your big takeaways?
Anybody, and you know me well enough to know this too, Jordan, like me being the person writing the Lamborghini Carson Beck article, not only am I sort of mortified to be participating in the conversation, but also I'm the least qualified person to be talking about it as someone that's only driven Honda Accords my whole life. So all that said, I thought it was a funny, you know, interchange. I thought credit to, you know, obviously Chip Towers, I believe, with AJC was the one that initially brought it up. And then credit to some others for shooting in some follow-up questions. I thought it would maybe be a one and done type of thing, but because, you know, people kept playing into it, I think Tate Ratledge got asked about it. Mykel Williams got asked about riding around in it too. So it became enough of the talk of the first day of spring practice that I figured I might as well engage in all of it. I thought it was, you know, I thought Carson Beck's response to it was funny, and I can imagine, you know, it's a Lamborghini, right? Like everyone, there's a reason it went viral. There's a reason that people talked about it the way that they did. Obviously the fact that we live in this NIL era is it's going to generate more buzz because of all of that. And, you know, some of the intrigue around it, whatever that may be. I did find it funny. You know, Carson Beck says his reasoning behind it is that he's been a car guy his whole life. So that makes perfect sense. You know, elevate into the status of being maybe the best quarterback in college football, and whether it's marketing deals or, you know, money that you have in your pocket to be able to spend, whatever, you know, the circumstances may be that he came to acquire this Lamborghini, he's a car guy. So for him, this was an opportunity, something he's always wanted to do. He joked with himself that he used to have worse taste in cars as a Ford Mustang lover his whole life. And so to finally graduate to Lamborghini, you know, he's glad to sort of step into that new realm. So he said this exact phrase, associate with the brand of Lamborghini, which I think is an interesting way of phrasing it in this current era as well. But I did find it funny, after he'd been asked a few times about it, he eventually was just like, it's just a car. Like, am I surprised people made a big deal out of it? Probably not, because people make a big deal out of things, but it's just a car. I just drive it around. That's what I do. Like, you know, it's not a big deal to me. But yeah, it sounds like he's also given some of his friends on the team some free rides around it and as well. So I think he probably has made some good friends within the team, getting their chance to ride around his Lamborghini.
What was it again about what you liked? Was it the engine? Is that what he said?
Oh yeah. He said there's something about when you're pulling out of the driveway, you hear the engine, the exhaust, knowing that it's just a well-built vehicle, you know, it puts a smile on his face. So, you know, any Georgia fans that are worried about it, you know, being a distraction, which is outrageous. And I think his ability to say, guys, we're talking about a car here, being a distraction. But I think that, you know, it puts a smile on the Georgia quarterback's face. And if you're a Georgia fan, I think that's what you want.
Absolutely. I did want to hit on some of the stuff that Carson talked about, and I actually wrote this on Tuesday as well, that I thought was really interesting that I'd never really considered. And it was him talking about, you know, his willingness to be a leader. And, you know, I had asked him about like how different this spring felt compared to last year. And he said, totally, because, you know, last year he's fighting for a starting job. Now he comes in entrenched as the starter. But he made a point when he was talking about leadership that I had never really thought about. He said, you know, last year at times he was a little hesitant to speak up, you know, and speak out, because this was the first time he was going through it. You know, he didn't really feel like he had the backing or the resume, I guess, and definitely like the respect of some of those older players to be willing to speak up if he saw something he didn't like, or if he thought something should be done a different way. And it's a totally different situation now. You know, he's coming off a season where he set the program record for completion percentage. I mean, he had an outstanding season, you know, and after you do that, you kind of come into a new year. And I don't think he's thinking twice about speaking up, you know, when he feels the need. And Kirby Smart made this point on Tuesday that, you know, he's not a very assertive guy. Like, he's not just going to jump on guys for the sake of doing it. But I think Carson does feel more comfortable, you know, having the year he had, having the success he had, that he's willing to do that. And to me, Ben, you know, you can give your thoughts, but I feel like that'll only help the team, that you've got your quarterback, one of your best players, you know, more than willing to speak up and make sure things are done the right way.
Definitely. And I think he has the respect of the team too. And I think that's ultimately what's important, to be a true leader and for your voice to actually matter. It's not about asserting yourself or telling people what they need to do or where they need to be. It's about having earned the respect of the people around you and them gravitating towards you. I think Carson Beck has certainly done that. The Lamborghini probably helps with that, if we're being honest. But I think that he, you can tell he's more comfortable. I mean, the way that he was at the podium, the way he was joking around about certain things, the way that he wasn't even feeling like he needed to have the, like when he was talking about helmet communication, and he was like, honestly, I don't really know what it's going to look like. He didn't feel like he needed to have the perfect answer for everything, because he's been there. He's done that. He knows what it means to be the starting quarterback at Georgia. And he knows that he doesn't have to put on this, you know, facade. He's out there being himself, which I think he's always done a pretty good job of, but I think it's always easier when you know that the job is yours. And so because he knows that, I think that it's going to allow him to assume that, you know, vocal leadership role just by nature. And I think, you know, again, there's a reason why he's a Heisman favorite. There's a reason why he's at the top of, you know, way too early 2025 draft boards. And it's because he has all of the tools necessary, and he's wired the way that you want your quarterback to be wired.
Ben, any more thoughts on the first day of spring, just what we've heard and what we'll be looking for these next few weeks?
I mean, I know I just brought it up, but I do find the helmet communication thing a little bit interesting, and not so much in the way that probably a lot of people do. It's just like, I'm fascinated to know how Georgia ends up trying to weave it into their plans, because like Kirby Smart downplayed it at first, being like, ah, well, we sort of did some of those things through walkthroughs in the past. And then he also proceeded to mention, like, you know, we've done some studies and we're going to talk with NFL teams. And so he's going to talk about it sort of like, ah, we'll see, we'll brush it off. But I, you know, knowing Kirby Smart the way that we do, he's going to put in the time and research and effort to figure out how to best maximize the helmet communication era. And then again, talking with Carson Beck, you know, he joked, like, I'm hoping it's just me and Bobo on there so that I'm not having to hear anybody else chirping around on things, but that he's, you know, still learning some of the nuances of what that will mean. And so I'm sure, you know, 10 years from now, we'll be looking back at this podcast saying, like, what a ridiculous conversation. Everybody's always used helmet communication and this is how it's done or whatever. But for right now, we don't know exactly what that's going to look like. And truth be told, certain teams are always going to do things a little bit differently at the jump. And so what it looks like 3 years from now for Georgia might be different than what it's going to look like this year. But I do think it's a fascinating thing, even though we didn't really learn anything at all about what Georgia's plans or how they're going to approach it, other than it's going to take some time to figure it out.
I did want to add to that. Kirby was asked about the notion and the proposal for there to be a summer signing period. And I thought it was interesting. You know, he was like, I want to watch a kid play. You know, I don't want there to be a situation where a kid signs and, you know, the idea that maybe a kid would sit out, which I don't think would happen all that often. And Kirby pretty much said as much. But then he kind of walked it back to, well, you know, there's always, you know, positives and minuses to that. So, you know, it's at the point now, and Kirby was asked about this on Late Kick. You know, people know Kirby Smart thinks about these rule changes, or like you were just talking about the helmet communication, because besides probably Dabo, you know, right now he's one of the proven coaches. I mean, he's one of very few coaches left that have a national title now that Nick Saban has retired. But it was funny to situation like that summer signing. I don't know if you took it that way, Ben, but it was like he kind of, you could tell he wasn't crazy about it, but then he still sort of walked the line of, well, there's positives and minuses with anything you do like that.
Well, I think coaches are just in no-win situations when they get asked about those rule changes that haven't happened yet, because if you say one thing, you know, rival fans and other things are going to think that you're doing something to posture for your own team's advantages. And if you say one thing and then the rule ends up being different, you're now seen as being against the new rule change the way that it ends up being. And I think that Kirby Smart would prefer to just, whatever the rules are, I'm going to find the best way to maximize Georgia's roster within the constraints of those rules. And so, yes, he might have some preferences here or there about when signing days are, how many spots you have, or whatever that might be. I'm sure he has opinions about, but he also understands that if the rules end up going against what his opinions are, it's not going to change that he's going to work toward maximizing that rule set. So it's like, I just think that he doesn't love answering it. To me, this is totally my opinion, it doesn't feel like he loves answering those types of questions because he knows on a whim it could change. Now, I think he likes to voice his opinions because, to your point, he is one of the valued voices in college football. He said on the Late Kick Live podcast he doesn't want to be the face of college football, but his voice is going to matter big time as we advance into whatever the new era of college football looks like. And so I think him bringing up some of those concerns is important, even if he's not state putting it, you know, his flag and saying, this is where I stand on the issue. Bringing up some of the concerns on either side, I think, is really important for people to really be able to weigh their perspective on things, because I do think it, you know, their perspective matters. I think so many times with these types of things, Nick Saban would bring up his opinion and people would push back so much against it because the feeling was, oh, look what he's doing at Alabama, or he wants it to be advantageous for Alabama. And the reality is Nick Saban's at Congress today talking about who knows what related to NIL because he cares about college football. It's not for Alabama's advantage. It's not for any of that. And the reality is if it was going to work out well for Alabama, I'm sure that, you know, there was a selfish part of him that was like, oh, that'll help us recruit, whatever. But everything that he's ever recommended has always been for the good of college football. I truly believe that. And I think Kirby Smart is the same way. He wants it to be best for the players. He wants it to be best for the coaches. He wants it to be best for administrators, fans, whatever that may look like. Now, we also know we live in a world where all of that can't coexist together. People are going to be pissed in their variety of ways at various times. But I just think that he's a voice that when he gets asked those types of questions around rules, I'm very curious to know what his viewpoint is on it, because I think it's one that's probably shared by a lot of people in the football world. Just not everybody is in the position that Kirby Smart's in to be able to voice them the way that he does.
A reminder to those listening, those watching live. So we did not get a viewing period on Tuesday, the first day of spring ball. We are expecting to get one on Thursday. So I'd be remiss not to tell you guys to go to Dogs 24/7 on Thursday. We should have a practice report and some observations from that, which should come in handy. Ben, before we get out of here, let's talk a little bit about what is going to happen on Wednesday. Georgia's going to have its pro day in the indoor practice facility. An opportunity for NFL scouts, NFL GMs, NFL head coaches to come to Athens to watch some of the Bulldogs that are getting ready for the 2024 NFL draft. We did learn in those interviews, Carson Beck said he is not going to be throwing, which I was honestly surprised by. I thought you might see him work with Ladd McConkey, Marcus Rosemy, Jack Saint, some of those guys. But when you look to Pro Day, is there a player or a couple players you're really interested in seeing work out? Who intrigued you the most among these Bulldogs as we get ready for Pro Day?
Do we know yet if Kamari is going to run tomorrow, the 40?
I would anticipate he will after not doing it in Indianapolis. I don't know that for a fact, but I do think he will.
So, I mean, that's probably, if he ends up running the 40, that's probably the thing that I'm most interested in, just because he hasn't posted a number yet. If you look, you know, on film, statistically, everything that he's done, he's a first round cornerback. I think that if there's a question about him, it would probably be that elite top end cornerback speed. He might have it. I honestly don't know. I mean, those at Georgia, I'm sure, have a much better impression of some of the numbers that he's posted when they've done their de facto pro days in the past. But if he runs a, you know, sub four, I mean, it's hard to think Kamari Lassiter is not going to be a first round pick. So that's probably the thing that I'm going to be That's probably the thing that I'm going to be watching the most. And then also just because they didn't do everything at the combine, just seeing what Brock Bowers and what Amarius Mims choose to participate in tomorrow is something that I'll be intrigued by, just because, you know, selfishly, we're going to get to be up close to it. And any chance that I can get to see Brock Bowers work up close, I want to see it. And anytime that I can see Amarius Mims at his size do things that he's able to do athletically, it's always fun to watch.
I think my big one is Brock, which you just hit on. I mean, the fact that he didn't do anything in Indianapolis, I think that it will be a chance, some of a proven ground, which, you know, at this point, Brock Bowers does not need to prove himself. But I understand, you know, some NFL personnel, they want to see him work out. I want to see him do it while they're up close, like we're going to be. So Brock Bowers is the guy for me. I want to see what he does. I think he's going to put on a show. You know, there continues to be questions about where he'll go off the board. I'm continuing to think he'll probably be in the 15s to 20s. But as I put on a message board, that's probably best for him because he's going to wind up landing with a team that could be a contender right away.
I know. It's crazy to me. I keep going back and forth on whether I think that the Brock slipping stuff is real or whether it's just the all-time smokescreen, because it's like if you're sitting in that 14 range or something like that, you probably love Brock Bowers and you want anything for him to fall out of the top 10 so that you can then justify trading up from like 14 to 11 or whatever you have to do to go get him. And so I just wonder if there is some smoke screening going on or whether folks really feel that he's dropping. I mean, I find it all ludicrous. I him falling out of the top 10 just seems like it seems imaginary to me. I can't even imagine a world where he is out of the top 10, but the more info that comes out, it feels like it might be trending that way. So
the only guy that I'm convinced might be able to stop that slide or that potential slide for Brock, you can't tell me Jim Harbaugh doesn't look at him and think, you know, as football guy as Jim Harbaugh is, I could just see him falling in love with Brock Bowers.
Honestly, yeah. Like, you know, I think some of the stuff about Brock not interviewing well at the combine is BS. I went into this one on the last podcast. Like, I just, not every single person's going to be, you know, the most boisterous person in the room every time you walk in. That's just not how everybody's going to be wired. And quite frankly, I don't see why you want your tight end to be wired that way anyways. But I think you're exactly right. Like Jim Harbaugh, Brock Bowers, they seem like a match made in heaven in terms of what matters to them, what's important to them in the game of football. So where do they pick?
I think they're around 7th or 8th.
7. Okay.
I have to look.
7. I mean, 7. I could see Brock 7 to the Chargers. I could see that.
I think there's a real chance there. And be sure to keep an eye out. We will have all kinds of pro day coverage. We'll get a chance to talk to all those guys once they're done working out. So we'll have a lot of videos and stories from that. Georgia men's basketball minute, as someone, I think it was Craig Lawson on the last podcast, said, we need to call it the Dunkyard Dogcast, the Georgia men basketball minute. I think that's a fair proposal. Maybe we'll see what we can do with that. Since the last podcast, Georgia went to Auburn, lost 92-78. They did cover. It was 15.5 point spread. They only lost by 14. A pretty good game. I mean, Auburn just shot the lights out. Georgia just didn't have an answer. That's a top 15 Auburn Tigers team that I think has a chance to make a run. So, you know, no shame in the way that game broke. And it was not all that surprising. Ends the regular season 16-15. They're getting ready to go to Nashville. They're going to play in one of the two games to open the SEC tournament on Wednesday night. They are the 11 seed. They're going to be playing 14 seed Missouri, who, and this sounds like the most cliche coach speaking I may ever say on this podcast, they did not win a game in conference play this year, but they gave so many different teams fits. They gave teams a lot of trouble and just for whatever reason could never finish the drill. So that game is probably going to be about 9:30 Eastern time. It may even be later than that, depending on when that first game ends. But I'm going to put you on the spot, Ben. Does Georgia get an SEC tournament win? Do you think they're able to beat Missouri to go into the Thursday portion of the tournament?
It does set up terribly for Georgia. I will say that they could be the one team that loses a game to Missouri this year. It's like from a March storybook standpoint, you know, it probably isn't the best. But I do think Georgia gets the win against Missouri. But Georgia's actually played Missouri probably tougher than some of the other better teams in the league have in terms of the games that Missouri's given, you know, some good fights to. So I think Georgia will win that one. Who do they draw if they win again?
I want to say is it Florida or Alabama?
Well, Alabama's not playing great basketball right now. So if there ever were a time to catch them, it's probably that. But I think you beat Missouri and then your run probably ends there. And I realize there's been a lot of dialogue about this Georgia basketball team this year on the Junkyard, elsewhere. I think if Georgia wins its first round game, you know, goes and plays in Alabama or a Florida and loses, that's about what the expectations should have been for this Georgia basketball team, just in terms of what the roster was and just, you know, how they played. Obviously, it was disappointing, I think, that there was such a large chunk of losses sort of on the back half of the SEC slate, so that hopes got up a little bit more than maybe they should have been earlier in the year. But we talked about it before. Georgia didn't really lose games that they were favored in. They lost a lot of games that they were already expected to lose. And I know that Georgia fans want to get to a point that they're playing games that they're not expected to lose, but you know, it takes a lot of time to be able to do that.
Yeah, it was really interesting to hear Mike White getting ready for this game, and I'll have some stories the next few days just sort of talking about roster retention and sort of the efforts Georgia's making there. I thought that was really, really fascinating to hear him on Tuesday. But we'll have a preview for that Missouri game before Wednesday, and we'll get an opportunity to watch that game Wednesday night and see how far these Bulldogs can go. We are going to wrap up the episode right there. I appreciate everyone who tuned in live, everyone who is listening to this after the fact. Again, I want to mention that there was not a fun period on Tuesday, but keep an eye out on Thursday. We are expecting that and should have some good content, maybe even a photo gallery out of that if I can swing that. So be sure to go to dogs247.com if you haven't already. Go subscribe there. All kinds of good content, especially now that spring practice is underway. Go to dogs247 on YouTube. And go to Dogs247 on TikTok. Got all kinds of good stuff over there and all kinds of videos that we will be cranking out in the next few days. So for Benjamin Wolk, I am Jordan Hill. Until next time, take care, everybody. Fowler.